Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, good friends. On this Friday morning, March 15, welcome to this week's Reporters Roundtable on the Bill Press Pod, where we look back on the big news of the week with three of Washington's top political reporters. Well, as if there were ever any doubt about it, it's now official. This week, both Joe Biden and Donald Trump racked up enough delegates to secure their party's nomination for president, and both were out on the campaign trail this week in what promises to be the longest general election campaign ever. Meanwhile, Congress was still tied up in fighting over whether or not to keep the lights on, whether to do anything about the border, and whether to continue support for Ukraine. Special Counsel Robert Hur showed up on Capitol Hill, only to be pummeled by both Democrats and Republicans. And leader Chuck Schumer ended the week by dropping a nuclear bomb on the Senate floor, calling for new elections in Israel to dethrone Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. Hey, big news on several fronts for today's panel to discuss. So let's say hello to Emily Gooden, political reporter for thedailymail.com. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Arthur Delaney, political reporter for HuffPost. Hello, Arthur.
Hello.
On Capitol Hill this week, just a couple of days ago.
On this vote, the yeas are 352, the nays are 65, one present, two-thirds being in the affirmative. The rules are suspended. The bill is passed.
Tick-tock, the bill is passed. Arthur, have you ever seen a bill fly through Congress so fast?
Well, it went as fast as one of those last-minute government funding bills that everyone agrees they just need to do after there's been some holdup that they've given up on. But it was remarkable. It passed the committee by a vote of 50-0 last week and then just sailed through the House floor. But I don't think it's going to go through the Senate as quickly.
Well, what is this? I mean, 352 to 65. I guess, Emily, this is, we finally found an issue in which both parties can agree.
It is truly a maybe an Easter miracle before us happening. And even better yet, the White House also agrees with Congress. So we're truly in a unique point in history. The White House is backing it, urging the Senate to pass the bill quickly, said President Biden will sign it. And it's the fact that China owns the majority of this app, and it's very worrisome as a security issue.
And Arthur, politically, some people are worried about the impact on young voters, right? There are 170 million Americans use TikTok. I'm not one of those 170 million, but mainly young Americans. Is this political danger zone for both parties among young voters?
That is the theory, but we don't know if that's true. Young people don't vote all that much, and some of these people are not old enough to vote. And the app had a lot of them do some lobbying with a pop-up message that said,
yeah, right.
And it totally backfired because kids were calling member offices and saying, if you ban TikTok, I'm going to kill myself. Or, you know, I learned more from TikTok than from school. And it just reinforced the idea that TikTok is brain poison along with the rest of social media. So if there's any question that a foreign adversary can control it, lawmakers said, all right, fine, let's ban this. I mean, it doesn't ban it. It forces the company to sell it. Though there are some people who I think have said that that's a dubious prospect because it'd be such an expensive thing to buy. We'll see.
And finally on TikTok, Emily, I find it hard to keep track of who's on whose side, right? I mean, Donald Trump mm-hmm. was for the ban. Now he's against it. Joe Biden is for the ban, and yet he has a TikTok account. I mean, so
Yes, he has a TikTok account where he is courting these young voters that you talked about. And often the White House invites TikTok influencers to come do like a behind the scenes with the State of the Union. Some of them have interviewed the president, all in this effort to court younger voters. So we've actually been asking the White House about this, and the White House refers us to the campaign, and the campaign refers us to the White House, and it's a giant circle of confusion.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so another big event on Capitol Hill this week. Robert Hur, special counsel on the Biden documents, how he handled documents after he left the vice presidency, appeared in front of the House Judiciary Committee this week. Arthur, you were there. How did Hur do? Did he hold his own? Did he survive the body blows from both sides?
Robert Hur was boring.
No.
There had been all this hype that he was a right-wing operator, and then it turned out all he wanted to do was say whether something was in his report or not in his report. So when Republicans asked him to expound on the senility and fragility of Joe Biden, he would just say, well, that's not in my report. And when Democrats asked him to call Donald Trump a criminal, he would say, that's not in my report. And when something was in his report, he would say, that's on page 47. So it was it was surprisingly boring and pretty much a political wash.
Probably the worst thing that could happen to you, right, as a witness, is to be boring in front of Congress, especially with all the hype. But Emily, I thought one of the most important exchanges was with Congresswoman Madeline Dean, who said, okay, you don't want to talk about, as Arthur pointed out, about anything other than what's in your report. Read this paragraph from your report. Here she is pushing him to read the whole thing.
You read a portion of it for me, beginning with the words, unlike the evidence involving Mr. Biden.
Unlike the evidence involving Mr. Biden, the allegations set forth in the indictment of Mr. Trump, if proven, would present serious aggravating facts.
Keep going.
Congresswoman, I'm happy to have you read the words in my report.
Well, it's your report, so I think it actually is more fitting that you read those.
Most notably, after being given multiple chances to return classified documents and avoid prosecution, Mr. Trump allegedly did the opposite.
Keep going.
According to the indictment, he not only refused to return the documents for many months, but he also obstructed justice by enlisting others to destroy evidence and then to lie about it.
You may stop there.
That was a pretty big score, don't you think, Emily, on her part?
Absolutely. And that was part of the Democratic strategy to show that the cases between Joe Biden and Donald Trump are very, very different, because obviously Trump is complaining it's bias, you know, it's a witch hunt against him, all the arguments we've heard from the former president. So, yes, very effective move on her part.
And Arthur, overall, wasn't the, the takeaway from the hearing that reading the transcript, Joe Biden's memory was not as bad as we originally thought when Hur used that famous phrase that he was just a well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory?
Well, this was the funny thing about the hearing. The Justice Department released the transcript that morning. And so that was essentially being digested at the same time as the hearing. And it showed that. So the key anecdote was that Joe Biden didn't remember what year Bo Biden died. It was 2015. But it turned out this was not like a pop quiz from Robert Hur. So it was different than many people expected it was based on the way Hur had described it, but sort of a Rorschach test in terms of whether this exonerated Biden. In my reading, the transcript did show Biden, you know, bringing this up himself and then being, totally mixing up the timeline. But it wasn't like the man just didn't know when his son died. He was struggling to put events in sequence in the course of a conversation. So, confirmatory for Hur, but also not the best look for the president. I think that, again, was sort of a wash.
Right. In fact, I read a good deal of the transcript. Biden had the month right, May, right? He had the day right, 30. He didn't immediately remember the year. So it was, again,
And then, you know what? One interesting thing her said was, you know, his aides said it was 2015 before Joe Biden even had a chance to say the year. And her, this was one moment where her went off script with Jim Jordan. He volunteered that the fact that White House aides kept chiming in to help Joe Biden answer questions reflected poorly on him in terms of his you know, him being an elderly old man.
Right. Emily, I wonder after this hearing, certainly the media had a field day with Robert Hur's initial report, right? And that famous phrase again, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory. Popular Information, Judd Legum's news site yesterday reported that between the issuing of that report and yesterday's hearing, there were 66 different stories about that well-meaning elderly man phrase in the Washington Post, the New York Times, and the Wall Street Journal. Very little about Donald Trump's problems remembering things or getting dates wrong or names of people wrong. Does this cause any maybe second thinking on the part of the media that maybe they'd better look into this a little carefully before running with the story?
Well, that phrase was political catnip, which is why Robert Hur wrote it. And frankly, the president has stumbled and stuttered. I cover the White House, and there are times he gets forgetful and gets tired. But he also, like everyone else, has really good days where he's on point. And he showed that, I think, in the State of the Union address. And yeah, I do think there will be more scrutiny on Donald Trump now, because he has made mistakes. He messed up Nikki Haley and Nancy Pelosi, things like that. So I think this is going to be a very long, very dirty campaign. So people need to buckle up and get ready for the ride.
Yeah, I think that is the bottom line. So Arthur, maybe the biggest news we're building up to this in out of Congress this week with Chuck Schumer taking the floor yesterday and really ripping into Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu, calling him an obstacle to peace. Here is the Senate leader.
If Prime Minister Netanyahu's current coalition remains in power after the war begins to wind down and continues to pursue dangerous and inflammatory policies that test existing U.S. standards for assistance, then the United States will have no choice but to play a more active role in shaping Israeli policy by using our leverage to change the present course.
Never heard anything like that on the Senate floor before. Arthur, what was the reaction?
A huge deal, like you said, because Schumer is the highest ranking Jewish official in the U.S., and his support for Israel has heretofore been unquestioned. And he's not saying we need a ceasefire or that we should not aid our ally. It's a new wrinkle in the entire debate over U.S. role in the Israel-Hamas war. And it was big. I mean, Republicans were mad. Senator John Fetterman, the Democrat, who's been a very pro-Israel, tried to have it both ways, where he didn't want to disagree with Schumer. You know, he said, Schumer is our leader, but I'm not sure I favor interfering in their election, essentially. So a big deal for sure, like you said.
And Emily, you cover the White House. I mean, the president has been pretty careful, right? He's publicly has expressed his frustration with Netanyahu, but he hasn't called for an immediate ceasefire, and he certainly hasn't called for new elections in Israel. Does this give Schumer's remarks, do they give Biden maybe a little more license to go beyond where he has? What do you hear there?
The White House won't touch those remarks with a 10-foot pole. So absolutely not. You know, they're walking a delicate balance here. They did anger Bibi Netanyahu when they hosted a rival member of his cabinet at the White House for meetings last week, meeting with the vice president. So I think they're slowly showing their displeasure with the prime minister in their own way. And we also saw after the State of the Union, President Biden not realizing he was on a hot mic when he was leaving the chamber talking to lawmakers, said he told Bibi they may need to have a come to Jesus meeting. So the behind the scenes, there are these signs of frustration, but they're being very, very careful what they say in public.
And Arthur, not to be the cynic, but I could not help but think, watching the leader Schumer make his remarks, that there was a political side to his remarks too, right? Which is that all these protests, pro-Palestinian protests, could have some impact on Democratic chances of holding on to control of the Senate in 2024. Am I reading that wrong?
No. That's the obvious subtext of this, that Democrats are worried that the pro-Gaza voices, protesters, people voting, refusing to vote for Joe Biden in primaries are a serious problem and could hurt them, especially in Michigan. But in his speech, Schumer also took care to castigate those who protest against Israel or demand a ceasefire without also demanding that Hamas stop fighting and release hostages. But I think for sure this is a signal that Democrats are worried about some of their base voters maybe not turning out in November.
Right. Meanwhile, Emily, you've reported that there is, well, we've had this ongoing effort, particularly in the part of Jim Jordan and James Comer, to impeach the president of the United States. They've held countless hearings. They keep saying we've come up with the evidence, all we need. Hasn't gone very far. There's a new wrinkle from the White House on that front this week. Tell us about it.
Yes. Yeah, so today, the White House counsel, Edward Siskel, sent a letter to Speaker Mike Johnson and said flat out, it's clear the House Republican impeachment effort is over. It outlines how they've gone on this long investigation, how they have not found any evidence the president did any wrongdoing. It criticizes Speaker Johnson for targeting the president's children, grandchildren, siblings. And it concludes with these words, enough is enough. It's obviously time to move on.
Whoa. So,
yeah. So the White House has come back out fighting. I mean, they've charged them with a political investigation. And as Arthur was saying with the Robert Hur hearing, like both sides were not very happy with him. This hasn't produced the smoking gun that Republicans were hoping for.
Yeah. Arthur, God knows they've had their chance, right? They've had, what, 2 years now, right, under the Oversight Committee and the Judiciary Committee. And there have been several hearings where they promised a smoking gun. I mean, the fact is they have not delivered, correct?
That's right. And they've got all of Hunter Biden's bank records. They have the entire content of his digital life from the relevant period when they claim that, you know, Joe Biden was involved in his business. They have all his emails, all his texts, all his private photos, and there's just nothing there. But this week, they are continuing to they subpoenaed AT&T for his phone records. But the White House letter, I think, reflects the shift in consensus among Republicans that they'll never vote to impeach. They haven't got any good material, and it's a new, much more hostile tone from the administration. It sounds more like Hunter Biden. You know, he turned combative last year, and the White House reportedly did not like that, having preferred a quieter approach. And now look at them basically telling Mike Johnson to shut up.
Right. I don't remember seeing a letter like that from a White House counsel to the Speaker of the House. So it is certainly a big development in this whole ongoing story. And there's lots more to cover. We haven't even looked at the national political scene, which took maybe final shape this week. Let's take a quick break. Then we'll come back and talk politics on the national level with Arthur Delaney from the HuffPost and Emily Gooden, political reporter for the DailyMail.com. This is the Bill Press Pod. And today's Reporters Roundtable on the Bill Press Pod is brought to you by the Labor's International Union of North America, or LIUNA, as they call themselves, LIUNA, under the leadership of President Brent Booker. The Labor's Union, kind of the backbone of the American labor movement, particularly active in the construction field, taking advantage of all those new jobs under the Infrastructure Act and in the energy field, both old-fashioned pipelines, if you will, and a new renewable energy with solar panels and wind turbines. The Laborers Union also launched this week a seven-figure campaign ad in support of President Biden, those ads running in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. We salute the members of the Laborers Union, thank them for their longtime support for the Bill Press Pod and for Progressive Talk Radio.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
We're back on the Bill Press Pod. Today's Reporters Roundtable, Arthur Delaney, political reporter for HuffPost, and Emily Gooden, political reporter for the DailyMail.com. Both Donald Trump and Joe Biden lined up all the delegates they need to secure their party's nomination, which won't officially happen until the national conventions. But we did see, Emily, the first ad out this week from the Biden campaign. Joe Biden talking and poking a little fun at himself over on the age issue. Here's the president's ad.
Look, I'm not a young guy. That's no secret. But here's the deal. I understand how to get things done for the American people. Donald Trump believes the job of the president is to take care of Donald Trump. I believe the job of the president is to fight for you, the American people. And that's what I'm doing. I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Can we do one more take?
Look, I'm very young, energetic, and handsome. What the hell am I doing this for?
A little different take that you normally hear from political ads, Emily. We're going to see more of this, I guess, right?
Yes, I'm glad to see the White House is finally tackling the age issue. For so long, they were just in denial, saying this wouldn't be an issue. But they seem to have realized, and the poll numbers have told them, they need to address it. And I think they're on the right track to address it in a funny, humorous way. Like, you know, candidates mocking yourselves make them likable. And frankly, it's something Donald Trump can't do. He does not have a sense of humor when it comes to Donald Trump. So I think this could actually be an effective strategy for the Biden campaign, but only time will tell.
Yeah. I just have to laugh when Donald Trump hadn't thought of it that way, not having a sense of humor about himself. I guess I've never seen it either. But Donald Trump was out this week, Arthur, with his message to the American people. This is from a speech this week at Mar-a-Lago.
Our nation is failing. We're a nation that is in serious decline. We've never had a situation like this where we're not respected, we're laughed at, we're considered almost a joke.
A totally different approach to what's really happening today, Arthur.
And a lot of Republicans talk that way. And it's funny that, it almost veers into bad-mouthing America. But for the most part, it's the same idea as make America great again, which implies that America is not great. But it's funny in the context of where our economy is vis-a-vis the world, with higher GDP and lower unemployment and people more prosperous than they've been in years. Interesting to see if that will work again.
And Emma, you both have pointed out that this is the beginning and probably sets the tone for what will be, no doubt, the longest general election campaign in history. Not necessarily something we're all looking forward to.
Not only the longest general election in history, but a repeat of 2020. So we're reliving 4 years ago, right again in real time. And what has both sides worried is that polls show voters are tired of this. Like, they didn't want this rematch. They didn't want to, the voters are smart. They know what's coming. They know this is going to be a long, hard election. So I think look for election fatigue among voters. And that's going to be what both sides are worried about, is getting out the vote. And the Biden campaign has been talking about all the state offices they've set up, all the volunteers they've recruited. Because we always say, you know, getting out the vote is the most important thing. But this is an election, I think, where that is genuinely the top issue, because people know these candidates. What is there more to learn?
Arthur, I just want to point out, just kind of a footnote, what you were mentioning about Trump talking America down. I just interviewed Barbara McQuaid, a professor of law at the University of Michigan, an NBC legal analyst, who makes the point that in the authoritarian playbook, right, if you look at authoritarians in history, whether it's Adolf Hitler or Orban in Hungary or Mussolini in Italy, number one tactic in the authoritarian playbook was trashing the country, right? Talking down the country, pointing out how bad things were, right? Because obviously, if they're good, you don't need a strong man to come in and fix them.
Yeah, it's scary, and it works. That's why we have a system of government designed to thwart exactly that tendency. So we'll see if it's if it remains effective should he get in office again, having had 4 years of being thwarted, basically.
Right. So just one final point here before we wrap, and that is the Vice President of the United States continued what has become a nationwide tour for her on the issue of reproductive rights. She went to a women's health clinic in Michigan, Minnesota yesterday, and told why she was there. Emily, here she is.
When we talk about a clinic such as this, it is absolutely about reproductive health care, breast cancer screenings, contraceptive care. That is the kind of work that happens here, in addition, of course, to abortion care. So to have laws in states that have caused clinics like this to shut down so that women have no access within any reasonable distance of where they live.
Emily, if not the number one issue, a big issue in the Democratic playbook this year.
Absolutely. And it's for reasons we were just talking about, Bill, the Get Out the Vote movement. This is the top issue among women. Women elected Joe Biden in 2020. They need women to come out in 2024. So they're heavily courting women. The First Lady, Jill Biden, did a big abortion rights tour last weekend. We saw the Vice President make this historic visit this week. And expect to keep seeing this over and over and over again.
And Arthur, we're even seeing some Republicans, starting with Donald Trump himself, suggesting that maybe Republicans ought to back down a little bit on this issue.
Oh, it's amazing how decisively the Republican position on abortion has been repudiated in the midterm elections of 2022 and all the other special elections that have happened since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. I don't think we've ever seen high-ranking Democratic officials just go to an abortion clinic and talk about abortion being good. But that's what people like. It turns out the pro-life position is unpopular, and it's like a huge thermostatic change that will propel Democrats, I guess, for years. People keep saying this is going to wear off, but it doesn't seem to be.
Right. And of course, this is election day in Russia, but we're not going to even bother to talk about that, because chances are that Vladimir Putin is going to win again. I mean, I think going way out on a limb on that, but I think we can let that happen by itself. Okay. But before you guys run off into the weekend, thank you, Emily, and thank you, Arthur. There must have been one story that caught your attention this week. We always call it our favorite story of the week. Arthur, how about you?
Oh, you'll please indulge me. The story that I liked that was a little off topic.
Okay.
It's by my colleague Dave Jameson and me. is about the 32-hour work week.
Oh, yes.
And almost out of nowhere, Bernie Sanders has signed on to this bill that Mark Takano, a Democrat from California, has introduced the past 2 years to amend the Fair Labor Standards Act to grant overtime protection for hours worked above 32 hours. So we would have a 4-day week, a 3-day weekend. This used to be a goal of the labor movement in the United States for decades until the New Deal. And it just, we just kind of forgot about it. And
yep.
40 hours, you know, what is so great about 40 hours and 3-day weekends? Doesn't everybody love them? It's a message bill that won't become law, but I think it's an important topic that we ought to discuss.
I thought that was a revolutionary bill. I couldn't believe it when I saw that, right? And Bernie Sanders getting on board with Mark Takano puts a lot of weight behind it. So we're going to hear a lot more about that. Like you, Arthur, I'm not sure it's going to happen, but it's a big deal. As Joe Biden might say, it's a BFD, right? And Emily, your favorite story of the week.
Well, my favorite story of the week has to involve the missing British Princess of Wales, Kate Middleton. I mean, even the White House was asked to comment on this story. That's how global it's gotten. It's just, you know, the internet conspiracy theories have gotten out of control. Kensington Palace handled this terribly in one of the worst PR disasters for the royal family since Megxit. But what is also interesting, and that your listeners may not know, I work for the Daily Mail, so I'm familiar with this. Media libel laws in Britain are so much more stringent than they are in the United States. And there's been a lot of complaints that the British press hasn't been covering this enough. And the reason they haven't is because they could be sued by the royal family, because that's how strict the laws are. And a lot of that happened in the wake of the death of Princess Diana. So what I'm wondering, Bill, is if we're going to see a change in British libel laws come out of this, because obviously the palace don't know what they were thinking with that photo. But if the people feel like they now can't trust the palace, there may be a call for a greater independent media to cover the royal family. So that may be the true lasting effect out of the story.
Not to be defending the princess, but wasn't she didn't make any like change the basic substance of the photo, did she? Wasn't she just trying to make sure everybody looked their best?
That is the controversy of how much it got changed. A lot of analysis showed there may have been, you know, there's so many theories that I'm not going to get into. People
okay.
Google it, but there is some concern that it was a composite photo, that things were changed. Like, why wasn't she wearing her wedding ring? It was all very odd. And of course, everyone is reading way too much into it. And the palace can't control the speculation, which I said has even reached the White House.
So, for my favorite story, I'm going to reach back, cheat a little bit, and go back into last week. The State of the Union certainly was last Thursday night, and right after, followed by the Republican response by Senator Katie Britt, which was so unusual, shall we say, that the speculation immediately started about who would get to play Katie Britt on Saturday Night Live, because we all knew they were going to take her on. And of course, Scarlett Johansson got the job. And we must admit, she did not disappoint. Here is Senator Britt, as played by Scarlett Johansson, in her kitchen.
It's like I tell my kids every night, we are steeped in the blood of patriots in a castle made of bones. Good night, kids. But to the American people who are struggling right now, know this. We hear you. We see you. We smell you. We're inside your kitchen right now, looking through your fridge. And what's that on the top shelf? Migrants.
I thought it was one of the funniest Saturday Night Live skits of all time. Scarlett Johansson, Saturday Night Live again. They always come through, as does our political panelists come through again. A great big thank you to Emily Gooden, political reporter for DailyMail.com, and to Arthur Delaney, political reporter for HuffPost. And thanks to all of you for joining us today. Have a great weekend, everybody. St. Patrick's Day on Sunday. Celebrate. And we'll be back on Tuesday with the next edition of the Bill Press Pod. And our guest will be Ron Brownstein. You see him on CNN. He's editor at The Atlantic. And he's going to talk to us about the political landscape today and all the challenges Donald Trump faces in the courtroom. Ron Brownstein joining us on Tuesday. We'll see you then on the next edition of the Bill Press Pod.